Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Talk radio tends to be one-sided. It also tends to be dwelling in hyperbole. It's explosive. It pushes people to, I think, extreme views without a lot of information.
Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California, speaking on Fox News Sunday this weekend to set up a call-in on two free speech issues in the news right now that are very much related. The Supreme Court decision yesterday to gut the McCain-Feingold campaign finance law and the desire of some Democrats in Congress, including Feinstein, to bring back the so-called fairness doctrine covering political speech on the airwaves. Call us on either of these things at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We will save some lines for supporters and opponents of the McCain-Feingold decision and supporters and opponents of the Fairness Doctrine. This is not a poll. Again, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post your comments for all to see at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. You've been hearing about the campaign finance ruling in the news the last day. The biggest effect will be to restore the right of corporations to spend unlimited amounts of money on campaign advertising just before elections. Unions and others too, but mostly, in the real world, corporations. All they have to do is say the ad is about an issue rather than the campaign or the candidate, even though the commercials can name the candidate who they support or the candidate who they oppose. The law that was struck down tried to make a distinction between real issue advertising and sham issue advertising that is really campaign advertising. But the Supreme Court ruled 5-4 yesterday that Congress basically cannot make that distinction. So that's one free speech issue. 212-433-WNYC. The other is not a court case, but a proposal before Congress that could very much affect talk radio. The new Democratic majority may vote to restore the so-called fairness doctrine, which is supposed to ensure that issues are covered fairly on radio and television. The fairness doctrine was ended by President Reagan on the grounds that government shouldn't tell businesses what kinds of speech to air. If they want to air mostly right-wing views, as has been the case with talk radio since the fairness doctrine went away, that's a constitutional matter of free speech, they say. Advocates of the fairness doctrine say that a requirement to air opposing views is needed because the airwaves are really public property. They are scarce, and they are a vital resource in our democracy, and therefore business owners shouldn't be able to use the public airwaves to promote their favored views and squelch others. Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein, as we heard, supported bringing back the fairness doctrine this weekend on Fox News Sunday. Here's a little bit more of what she said.
Well, I'm looking at it, as a matter of fact, Chris, because I think there ought to be an opportunity to present the other side. And unfortunately, talk radio is overwhelmingly one way.
So another fairness doctrine supporter is John Kerry. Now, here he is in an interview I recorded with him a few months ago. This is the first time we're airing this clip of John Kerry.
No, I think the fairness doctrine ought to be there, and I also think the equal time doctrine ought to come back. I mean, these are the people who wiped out one of the most profound changes in the balance of the media is when the conservatives got rid of the equal time requirements. And the result is that they've been able to squeeze down and squeeze out opinion of opposing views. And I think it's been a very important transition in the imbalance of our public dialogues.
Now, when you come right down to it, these two issues, McCain-Feingold and the Fairness Doctrine, are really about the same question, which is, what does free speech mean in our democracy? And what does it mean when resources are so unevenly distributed? So call us on this at 212-433-WNYC or post a comment at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. My own view as a media person, which I'll give you by way of full disclosure, when the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law abridging the right to free speech, it doesn't seem to allow for any exceptions. It doesn't try to balance the interest in free speech with an interest in diverse speech. And yet, the kind of situation we're facing today isn't anything like what the framers were trying to address. Their free speech was abridged by the King of England, an authoritarian government autocrat trying to minimize dissent. Today, the issue is that the wealthy few, mostly corporations, plus some unions and a few individuals, have so much of the money to buy up the lines of political speech that they are effectively drowning out dissent. So for me, the parallel with colonial times is that the powerful dominate the rules of speech. The king back then, the corporate advertisers and corporate broadcasters who sell the advertising today. Today, as in colonial times, the less powerful, the less wealthy get less speech. It's not the same free speech issue as in Soviet Russia, say, or Iran, right? You go to jail for dissent or you get killed. But it's a free speech issue nonetheless. Whose speech gets heard? Whose speech matters? Whose speech gets marginalized? And so we get to some very fundamental questions here. What is democracy? What is the meaning of free speech in a democracy? What is the role of a democratic government in fostering free speech in a democracy? So let's go there for just a minute. What is democracy? Is it just freedom from government? Freedom from government intervention? Remember Donald Rumsfeld dismissed the looting in Iraq in 2003 just after Saddam fell as a pent-up expression of freedom? But nobody really thinks that's all democracy is. Democracy is also about balancing the interests of different groups of citizens in a good faith way. Democracy is about power sharing. That's why we have two houses of Congress and three branches of government and all that. And so you get the role of the government in trying to maximize free speech in these cases, and others saying, no, no, the government is interfering with my speech. So that's my own view by way of full disclosure. And now the question is, what do you think? Call up and take either side of these issues. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Lulu in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm working on a documentary that explores why more people don't vote, and this is something that comes up a lot, is whether or not people are informed. The Fairness Doctrine had two basic elements. It wasn't just that you had to provide both sides of an issue, but it also required broadcasters to devote some of their airtime to discussing controversial matters of public interest,
right,
which means you had to provide information. And we have had studies since the Fairness Doctrine was repealed that indicate that the actual that people are literally less informed since the Fairness Doctrine was repealed.
How do you measure that?
These were studies that were done, I think, by Media Access Project, MAP, and I was just going through my notes and trying to find the actual study.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it's not that hard to give people tests on, you know, on basic current issues and find out whether or not they're informed or not.
So therefore what?
I'm in support of the Fairness Doctrine, and I think it's very important to democracy. You can't have a democracy if you don't have an informed public. And I think the Fairness Doctrine was one of the main things that helped our democracy be an informed, have an informed public.
So people on the other side will say, that was in the old media universe. Now you have 500 cable channels, including any number of news channels operating 24 hours a day. You also have the internet, where you can find any kind of information just about and any kind of political niche just about. So all of that is archaic at best and won't have much information impact on the amount of information, because look how much information is already available.
You have to look at the percentages of where people get their information from. 50% of the American public gets their information about campaigns from TV, and 34 million people still watch the networks. They still have, even though their viewership has decreased, they still have the major viewership. So when you have the major networks only providing 5 minutes of information about issues during the final month of the campaign, which is what happened in the last campaign, you literally have a less informed public. And also, you know, they've tested local news stations, and the amount of local news being offered has also decreased considerably.
Lulu, thanks a lot for your call. And we go to Allison in Brooklyn. Allison, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I tend to agree that the current free speech issue is one of access rather than necessarily censorship. And I think it touches on the myth of freedom in general, you know, the idea that freedom is something that a free market will automatically produce. The idea that the government isn't currently regulating speech is not really true, because when we have our public airwaves, our satellites, I mean, we're talking about actual public space that is entirely privatized and that is affected mostly by corporate lobby, that is a type of government regulation.
Or a government, where's the government regulation in that as opposed to government being laissez-faire?
I guess it's sort of an irony because it's the lack of regulation. It's a de facto decision when officials respond to private interests and when there is a lack of protection for public resources like our airwaves, that is a type of intervention. Mm-hmm. It turns into a theocracy of multinationals, but it's actually our government officials who make that possible because of indebtedness to campaign contributions or whatever else runs the decision-making process.
Which is part of where the Fairness Doctrine and the campaign finance issue intersect. Thank you for your call. Kay in Manhattan has a different point of view than our first two callers. Hi, Kay.
Hi. I think that it is actually the unfairness doctrine because it is determined by the free market. If you want to, you can turn into Air America or another station with another point of view. And it is the people who are making this choice. It is people who are choosing to turn on these networks and listen to the advertisements and support these stations. There is nothing freer than this. And there's this whole idea is, I think to me and a lot of other people, is rather frightening. And to just target talk radio is unbelievable. I mean, this is not going to target CNN. This is not going to target the stations. This is one particular branch which I think is the most free media in the United States, one of the most free medias.
It is interesting that the Fairness Doctrine does not have a history of getting government involved in minute weighing of balance, right? So you look at a story about this topic or that issue on CBS or CNN or whatever, the government is not going to look at it and say, well, this one was a little biased this way, that one was a little biased that way. They're going to look to see if on major issues of public importance that they, you know, that they deem to call that there are basically multiple points of view being expressed at all. The people on the other, so that's a, I'm agreeing with you, that's a limitation of the Fairness Doctrine. But when you get these kind of gross imbalances like what happens in talk radio, then the people who disagree with you say, well, look, this isn't just, you know, we live in a country that's like roughly 50-50 Democrat and Republican, but talk radio comes out like 80-90% conservative, then it's probably because of a corporate interest, not just because they're reflecting the marketplace. Do you think that's impossible?
I think it's impossible because I think if anything, the corporate interest would be on the other side. And I think that talk radio allows this part of the country to be heard.
You think that corporate interest would be on the liberal side?
Oh, absolutely.
But when absolutely. So many of the controversies that get played out on talk radio have to do with, you know, what corporations are doing and how corporations should be regulated or not and how taxation should be structured on corporations and the wealthy and things like that, which leads other people to conclude that it's, you know, that it's their interests that are mostly getting heard.
I don't think that's a huge part of liberal radio. I don't think that's a huge part of it of the liberal thought. And I think, generally speaking, if you look where the contributions are, you would see that they mostly contribute to the Democratic Party.
Well, corporations, I think, generally contribute to who they think is going to be in power for the most part. So right now, with Democrats on the ascendance, we're seeing more corporations donating to Democrats than they did, say, in the late 90s and early 2000s.
But during that time, there also were huge contributions given to the Democrats. I think that this is so un-American. This is so un-American in our basic freedoms and our basic beliefs. And if a conservative radio expresses this point of view, it's because these are the people who are listening to it and supporting it. And on the other hand, you could say that public radio, most of the point of view is on it, the callers call in with more of a liberal bent.
Right. Well, I would disagree with that. But I actually want to leave public radio out of it for this discussion, because we're really talking about regulating commercial speech, since public radio actually already satisfies what the Fairness Doctrine calls for, which is to have many points of view on important issues of the day. It's really the two things that the other caller was referencing: basic amount of time devoted to public issues, and also basic balance in points of view admitted to the airwaves. But Kay, thank you very much. And Tony in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. I produced the original Dick Cavett show.
No kidding.
On television at the height of the Vietnam War. And
yeah.
At that time, both the Fairness Doctrine and the Equal Time, you know, Amendment were in practice, and it certainly was effective in terms of balancing the views on my show. Sometimes it was intrusive in the fact that you'd have to. I remember having had Senator Fulbright on one evening, who was extraordinarily articulate and went on longer than we expected, and the network insisted that I put immediately on a spokesman the next show to counteract him.
What was the issue? Do you remember?
It was a senator from Wyoming. I forget who he was. But anyway, he was not very... The government put him on. I mean, Johnson administration assigned him. We gave him exactly the same amount of time. He was not nearly as effective a speaker. And
Do you remember what the issue was, Tony?
It was the Vietnam War.
Oh, it was. Uh-huh.
And so we were then blamed, just as today, we were blamed for being biased towards the anti-war, because the effectiveness, we were kind of blamed of having put on a lame person,
yeah,
which was actually the administration. So there were still problems in terms of the perception of our show as being, say, left wing. My other point quickly, though, was that the media world has changed so enormously with the 24-hour television and the vast talk radio. I don't think it would be enforceable today over that vast range of programs. What they might do is take certain shows that are purportedly just news shows and apply it to them and label the other shows as purely opinion.
Right. And it would apply, I think, unless Congress chooses to really amend the communications law, it would apply to such a small number of stations and networks, because it would only apply to over-the-air radio and television. It wouldn't apply to cable.
Oh,
now,
wouldn't? I didn't realize that.
A previous caller said, don't lose sight of what a large percentage of Americans still get their news from old-fashioned television stations. I don't know if that's true. Presumably, it will become more and more irrelevant unless they choose to apply it more broadly. But, you know, it gets into new media issues, too. Like, they're debating this access to the web called net neutrality, right, where some of the companies that control web access want to allow corporations to buy easier access. And so ones that are not paid for in that respect will be a little bit harder to access.
Yes.
So then you'd start again going more toward corporate purchased speech being available to you even on the Internet.
I think it's more the labeling. I mean, it's what annoys people about Fox News is that it claims to be fair and balanced and isn't. I think people today accept the idea that, as this other caller said, you can listen to, it's like op-ed.
Yeah, Fox News, my understanding is Fox News would not be touched by the Fairness Doctrine because they are presenting the various points of views. Now, they may have, Hannity and Combs, and set Combs up as this soft target, and Hannity's point of view always dominates, but the government would not be measuring it at that level.
Fox News has an on-the-air component, though.
Oh, I see. Fox News on Channel 5, that kind of thing. Yes. Okay. Thank you very much. Let's see. Who else? Tom in Oradell. You're on WNYC. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Brian. part of this is people supporting the Fairness Doctrine don't like to be criticized or questioned, no one likes to be criticized. But you've got Dianne Feinstein and Trent Lott really reacting, it seems, to the objections that have been raised to the immigration bill, which they don't like the fact that the details of the bill have been brought into question, and they have not answered the details.
It is ironic to hear Trent Lott on this, because you're right, and I didn't mention it earlier, this new conversation about the Fairness Doctrine grew out of Trent Lott and some other Republicans who support the president, as well as the Democrats, on the immigration bill, being frustrated by how powerful talk radio is turning out to be in mobilizing the anti-immigration reform base on the right, which is only about 20% of the public based on the larger polls, but they're very active.
Well, they don't like you know, established power doesn't like being questioned. And people like Lott and Feinstein and McCain, who've been in Washington for 30 years with people bowing to them every day, don't like the fact that people have said to them, how are you, for example, how are you going to deal with 12 million people applying for amnesty when you can't even deal with the people now who want passports? They can't answer the question, and they don't like people raising that question. I don't think it's ideological, because I think there are liberals who object to the Fairness Doctrine as well because of a constitutional issue. It's really established power not liking to be questioned.
Tom, we're going to leave that opinion as the last word in this conversation. I think this is something we're going to be hearing more about as the next months go on in Washington. Thanks to all of you for your calls. Nuala McGovern is the executive producer of this program, with producers Jim Colgan, Priya George, and Lisa Allison. And who is that at the audio controls today? That's Jay Cowett. I'm Brian Lehrer. Talk to you tomorrow.